friends.
Good afternoon.
We have again now number 7 of our marathon. Right?
Yeah.
7. And this afternoon I will let Richard introduce what he's going to talk about.
Well, this will be another afternoon or another session of abstruse and convoluted reasoning is what it will be. Today we're going to talk about the astrology and the light ether. We're working our way slowly through the ethers. We began talking about the vital body as a whole. And when we did that, we said that the vital body has a character all of its own, even though much of its function right now is the building and maintenance of the dense physical body. It still has a different character from the dense physical body because it has a different purpose. Each one of our bodies has a character that is all of its own. If the spirit is not strong, it happens in rare cases that the bodies can act autonomously or semi-autonomously. It's rare, but it does happen. There are some things that happen fairly regularly. There is an autonomy in our desire body, where within the desire body, a pseudo-self has coalesced with the concrete mind, and it has set up shop for itself, and it is semi-autonomous, and that's a big part of our life in the spiritual life, is learning to overcome that pseudo-ego and tame it and bring it to serve the true self. The vital body follows this pseudo-ego because it must. It doesn't have any choice. The vital body has a character that is something like a new mother. It wants to tend to the physical body and take care of it, and it would do that if it was left to its own. It would do that in nothing but that. We would be in a vegetative state. Now, in some extreme cases, this does happen when the higher ethers withdraw, and not in the way that we want to withdraw. They withdraw with the self, and the person isn't all there. And then you find something like a vegetative schizophrenic. The body is just there, and there's sort of develop a nice fatness, and it's an interesting thing. All right. The relationship between the vital body and the dense body goes way back to the sun period when the vital body was begun. And so the vital body has that solar nature. The relationship of the sun to the vital body is mutual. The vital body needs the sun, and the sun expresses through the vital body. The dense body, as we've been saying, is built into a form or a matrix made of the two lower ethers of the vital body. Changes in the physical body usually occur after changes in the ethers. Things work their way down from the spirit, and when there is a change, they appear in the inner bodies before they appear in the outer body. And Max Heindel gives a perfect example of this relationship of the vital body to the physical body, in that when we've been ill and our vital body has been weak and limp, after we start to recover, we recover first in the vital body, and we get our vital body back, even though the physical body is still plugged up and not completely healthy yet. Not only is the physical body suspended in the vital body, in a different way, the vital body is suspended in the physical body. And that's what we're going to try to get at today, which is a rather abstruse thing to get at. The adept seers of the Rosicrucian order teach that the endocrine glands are not really part of the physical body. They are condensed into a physical state, but that they are direct parts of the vital body, and that they are here in our fallen state where our physical bodies have become way too materially oriented and way too hardened. This is necessary in order to regulate, because the vital body cannot work indirectly as it would like to, so it enters right into the direct control of the body. It does this through the bloodstream, through the gaseous part of the bloodstream. And with one exception, all of the endocrine glands are not under the control of the central nervous system. They communicate with each other, and they have their own wisdom, and they regulate each other through the bloodstream. The one special case, which we'll talk about quite a bit today since we're talking about the light ether, is the pituitary body. The pituitary body, one lobe of it, the back lobe of the pituitary body, the pituitary body is a very curious organ, if you want to call it that, a gland, I guess is the proper word, is very curious because it has two lobes. And each of those lobes develops from a different part of the embryo, and they coalesce to form one gland. And the posterior lobe of the pituitary body is connected to the nervous system, and we'll come back to that in a little bit. Because the things that come from the endocrine glands relate to the gaseous part of the blood, we only see them in deposit. And this gives Materia Medica a difficult time with people who have endocrine problems. What happens is they either get the endocrines from animals or they use synthetic endocrines. And they cannot do things at that very, very faint level that the endocrine glands themselves do things at. You might say that the way synthetic hormones or animal hormones, when they're dosed, it's something like trying to adjust the wings of a butterfly with a hammer. It isn't a fine touch kind of thing. And it's also like trying to drive a car from outside the car, because the endocrines are within. They have the within quality from the vital body. All right. The endocrine glands usually work together as a team. And each one, it does its work, but it does its work in harmony with all of the others. And this is a good example. Max Heindel gives a good example for something else that works extremely well with the endocrine glands. He talks about having fingers through holes in a wall manipulate, and if you're on the side where the fingers are, all you see are the fingers, and you do not realize that they belong to a common organism that is on the other side of the wall. And that's basically what the relationship of the endocrine glands to each other are. So let's try to look at that a little bit more. Now, in the Bible, it says in one place that we are made in the image of God. In another part, it says that God is a spirit. If we put those two together, if we are made in the image of God, we are spirits in the same way that God is a spirit. And from this, we can conclude that we are wholes in the same way that the spirit is always whole. We are units that have the same parameters as the cosmos. That is, if we're not talking about identifying with our bodies now, we're talking about ourselves in spirit. Christian mystics, like the Rosicrucians, have found that this is true exactly. Our spiritual nature is threefold. We have a divine spirit, which is the will to be, the life spirit, which is the life and truth and love of that divine spirit, and we have a human spirit, which is an idea that is an ideator. It is the thinker, it is the self. And in that, we are identical to the Godhead. The Godhead, in an analogous fashion, has the same threefold constitution. But somatically, in our bodies, we are fourfold. We have a mind, we have an emotional desire nature, we have the etheric nature that we've been talking about all week, and we have the dense physical nature. And so we are different as creatures or as forms than we are spiritually. Now, the Bible says not only that God is a spirit, but it says that we should worship in spirit and in truth. And when we disobey that is when we get into trouble. A lot of people are focused completely in this chemical region of the physical world. And that's all they can see. And that's all they can experience. And so what they do is they take the symbols in a literal way. And what they do is they think of God as a being like us with a long beard that is somewhere in heaven, which is a rather strange notion because it's different than everything else that we see in the heaven. Well, the fact of the matter is that God does have a physical body. And that physical body of God is in heaven. Not in the higher spiritual worlds, but in the heavens. The dense physical body of God is everywhere that there is a dense physical planet. It's like the dense physical body is distributed through the dense physical matter of the cosmos, of the solar cosmos anyway. So that breaks down its parallel to the materialist point of view, but it breaks things down in a fairly simple way. Now, the analogy doesn't hold through completely, because the planets are not only the dense physical body of God, they are also the organs of the body of God. One does not have to study astrology long to know that, yes, different areas of the body, like the feet are ruled by Pisces and the lower legs and ankles are ruled by Aquarius, but the organs themselves are ruled by specific planets. And that one sees that very quickly when you do even a little bit of diagnostic astrology. So the essential character of divinity becomes manifested astrologically in the macrocosm and in the human microcosm. And this is especially true of the things that we are speaking of now, the endocrine glands. The endocrine glands have specific astrological rulerships. And like the planets, they're spread out through the body, from the neck or in the cranium all the way down to the genitalia. Nothing below that, but they're set out. Moreover, their rulerships are obvious and they are demonstrable. This is because people become imbalanced. And even the manifestations of the vital body in the dense physical become imbalanced, so that different endocrine glands become hyper or hypoactive. And when we have someone who is hyperactive, we have a endocrine type. And the endocrine type is usually a planetary type. When the endocrine gland is hypo, It is then a sort of a negative anti-type, but that's much more difficult and tricky to work with. So, for example, there is a pineal type of character, or there is a thyroid type of personality. When we find somebody that is an endocrine type, we find that they are an expression of one part of the planet carried to extreme. And this is a good way to learn new things about astrology in trying to understand people who are hyperactive in one of the endocrine glands. For example, somebody who is a pineal type is often strange, very poetic, and they have their even physical features that go along with this extreme condition. Or we have a thyroid type of personality. A thyroid type of personality is nervous and hyper, and you know, just can't settle down at all. And from them we can learn things about the character of Neptune and the character of Mercury. The difficulty with all of this is that we don't always learn all of these things. Most people become familiar with astrology through books and not through direct observation, which is counter to the way the spiritual life is supposed to be. And as a consequence, we have one thing handed down to another, to another, to another. And we look in the books and we say, hey, that works. But the thing of it is that there are many different manifestations of thyroid types or of pineal types. And therefore, things need more observation if we want to develop that way. We can't take for granted that we know all of what astrology is. People are more creative than that. We're evolving swiftly, and if you try to judge the next horoscope by the last one, especially if it's of a new generation, you're going to be fooled. It's one of those things that a lot of planetary characteristics we don't know. We don't know them because we haven't manifested them yet. We're just at the beginning of our creative manifestation of character. We have a long way to go. Now, much of physiology is not changing very rapidly. They're getting into more and more of the minutiae, and they're finding astounding things physiologically. But if you take a physiology book from now and take one from about 20 years ago, the basic composition of them is not greatly different, except in one area. Endocrinology is one of those things, because they keep finding more and more and more types of hormones, each of which has a different kind of activity. And it is well worth a study of endocrinology in order to learn about astrology. It's too bad that we don't have the access to the people who have various kinds of endocrine conditions, so that we can learn the astrology. It makes us sound like, hey, we want to learn astrology rather than to understand people. But that's one of the way. All right. We're part of the way to our objective. We have an objective here. We're trying to get to the light ether, and so we want to look at some horoscopes. And we know that there is then a definite association with specific planets with endocrine glands. That's part of the way to the objective. This is, I told you, this is going to be abstruse. The second stage of the journey is more difficult than the first stage. It is more difficult not because the information is harder to understand or that it's complicated. It's difficult because the only way we can know this information really well is if we have trained clairvoyance and we can make an investigation and check it out for ourselves. And since I'm not clairvoyant in that way, so I can't do that yet. What we can do is look at what true seers have said and we can take it into consideration and then see if it works, and then use that line from the title page of the first Cosmal Conception ever printed, prove all things. We can prove them to see whether they really work. And that suits us perfectly as Rosicrucian students, because we are inquisitive types and we want to know why, and we're not happy or not content until we know the ultimate why of things. We have that temperament, and we should ride that temperament to its end. Now, there are times that we just can't do that. And we have to be honest with ourselves and say, this is not accessible to me at this point. What we can do then is approach the subject with open minds and give it a very clear listening, and then try it and see if it works. That's exactly what we are asked to do when we begin to read the Cosmal Conception. Max Heindel says, all I ask is a fair hearing. If it doesn't answer to your reason after having given it a fair reason, after having given it a fair hearing, you can discard it. All of us have done that, and all of us, I believe, in this room have been very positively moved by what we have gained from that taking it into account. And, all right, our lives are much the better for it. So now what this means is all a big prelude to say, I'm going to speak from the authority of the Rosicrucian philosophy and not from myself, though some of the interpretation will be personal. The teachers from the Rosicrucian order teach that there is a special resonance between the pituitary body and the light ether. And there is a special resonance between the pineal gland and the reflecting ether. So the light ether and the pituitary body and the reflecting ether and the pineal gland. There are resonances between them. If we assume that this is true, it is very important to us that are seeking a direct esoteric experience. It means that there is a dense concentration, if there is a dense concentration of light ether in the vital body, there is more of a screen for us to project on. And if there is a dense concentration of reflecting ether in our soul body, there is more of a screen for the pineal gland to project on. A person who has a lot of light ether, we talked about this in the philosophy talk last night, literally walks in light. A person who has a lot of light ether in the aura is startlingly intuitive, because there's something there for the light ether to play upon. It's as though a person is their own source of light when they have the light ether in them. They literally do walk in light. It's an inner light, and it is an inner light that is the medium of etheric vision. So we see through the concentration of the soul ethers in our soul body, even in the part that is interpenetrated with the physical body. If there is a sufficient concentration of light ether in the aura, then there is a very strong light ether component in the spinal fire that goes up and down the spine, hopefully up. The concentrated stream of light ether is the substance to which the pituitary body resonates. And it starts the process of inner vision. In etheric vision, a vibrating pituitary body has creates a virtual link, a harmonic link, almost like what we now call, what do they call it? Microwave link between one place and another. So there is a bridge of waves that produces a connection. When the spinal fire is dense enough in the soul ethers, the light ether component goes up the right side of the spine, and it passes first through the heart, and then it passes through the bridge between the pineal and pituitary body and the divine spirit, looking through the silent watcher sees. We'll have more to say about all of this as we go on. When the spinal fire is dense enough, we can manipulate it by the pituitary body. And we begin to see. We have specific exercises to this end. And they all begin with concentration. When a concentrated stream of spinal fluid, which is using the word a little bit different than the way medicine uses it, it forms a circuit. And that circuit is through the connection of the pineal and the pituitary body. Oh boy, whew. It's a little bit of a digression, but we have to look at a couple of important facts about this. The fact is, if we do not have the light ether, we cannot see. It's just that simple. It's not a matter we can do exercises from now until the proverbial cows come home, and if we don't have the soul stuff, we can't see. We can't any more than we can drive a car without fuel. We can't see without the soul stuff. It isn't, it's up to us. If we do the sacrificial living, if we do things from the goodness of our heart, as we spoke of last night when we were talking about attracting the light ether component into our vital bodies, if we make those kinds of sacrifices, especially sacrifices of self, for the Christ or for the all or for the other, we attract the stuff, and it's up to us to make that activity part of our lives. Now, it should be mentioned here that what we're talking about is positive, controlled clairvoyance. We're talking about a faculty that is in our care. In the same way that we can direct our eyes and look at what we want to look at, when we have a positive control clairvoyance, that is ours. We're not talking about involuntary clairvoyance, and we're not talking about psychic states or mediumship or anything like that. The fact is that no one can give us life ether. There are birds that take food and digest it, partially digest it, and they feed it to their babies. You can't do that with light ether. You can't put light ether in somebody else's aura. It must be part of our own etheric being. We attract light ether to our vital bodies by living in such a way that light ether is attracted to us. We gave an example last night of two of my friends, one of whom saw the light ether being built into the other. This means that at the negative pole of the light ether, observation, especially observation that is looking for the good, works. Relating to what we've been talking to the last several days, each of the ethers relates to one of our four bodies. The light ether relates to the desire world. And in the desire world, we look for the good so that we can purify our desire bodies of the gross selfishness of the lower desire world, and that we can see the higher good in people. We can strengthen it and help them. That carries into observation in the dense physical body, in the practice of looking for the good as a big part of observation. At the positive pole, it means heating and driving the blood. We talked quite a bit about that last time. Again, it's a very important repetition, but one cannot develop the capacity, the stuff, the fuel, so to speak, for etheric clairvoyance unless one lives a life of self-forgetting service. Again, the things that we do from the nerves and muscles are different than the things that we do from the heart and from the blood driving. The blood system is from the life spirit. The neuromuscular system is of the human spirit and the desire body. So the more that we can live in the blood, the more we can attract the light spirit, the light ether. The second fact is about the control of etheric clairvoyance. Now, Max Seindel states very clearly that we can take self-conscious control through the nervous system by controlling the pituitary body. He uses the word nervous system. And this is why the pituitary body is so very important, because the pituitary body is the only one of the endocrine glands that has a connection to the nervous system. That brings us back to something that we were talking about just a few minutes ago. The pituitary body is unusual in the endocrine system. It has two lobes, each of which comes from a different part of the embryo. The embryo develops in three layers, which, by the way, relate to the three attributes of Trinity. And it's very interesting to study embryology in the light of spiritual things. I had to do it especially because I had a kind of cancer at one time in my life about 25 or 28 years ago. And that was the kind of cancer that developed when the lungs separated from the intestines. And some intestinal cells were left behind in the bronchus, and all of my life they were the seed of a cancer that developed in my bronchus. But I don't want to go into all my always, so we'll just call it that there. But that's where I began to learn about the different layers of the embryo and what each one does. So that posterior lobe is the unique condition in the entire endocrine system. This tells us that when he says that we can neurally control the pituitary body, Max Seindel knew what he was talking about. Every invisible helper should be able to know the same thing. All of us should have the experience of seeing every part of the body in action. We have those experiences. Part of our time when we are out of the body as invisible helpers is done in healing and education work and things like that. But sometimes we have little schools. And they're very interesting schools of things that happen there. And one of them is that people are shown with a clairvoyant kind of experience how every part of the body functions. Much better than x-rays because you're seeing it live. Much better than dissecting cadavers because you're seeing it how it actually works and you're not supposing how it works after the fact. Now, spiritually, this is very important because the union of the pituitary body and the pineal gland, when that bridge is formed, is truly a bridge between heart and head. And what this is saying, that the two channels going up the spine or the two pathways of the spinal fluid have to be balanced and they have to work together. And this is saying that in order to have a healthy clairvoyance, one must blend head and heart and they must be balanced with each other. This is saying that the whole process of clairvoyance, of making this connection, depends on our ability to do that very thing. Also, what this says, it says that the pituitary body is like a little miniature of that same process, because it has the head qualities of the nervous system and it has the heart qualities of the endocrine system. And when the two of them are wedded in one gland, that is again like a blending of head and heart. So there's no way that we can healthfully and with an objectivity unfold clairvoyance, be it a theory clairvoyance or desire world clairvoyance, we won't talk about anything beyond that, without having a balance between head and heart. And we all know ourselves well enough, even if we don't do really well at retrospection, we know ourselves well enough now to know when we're cold and need more heart, or when we're blubbering all over with feelings and need more control of our feelings. We know that. It's just a matter of acting on what we know. So we get a redoubled message in the process of opening up clairvoyance. So we are uniting things together in our whole spiritual constitution, the relationship of the self to the other. The self and the other being in Christ. In our relationship, in our total consciousness, this is what is involved in unfolding a balance between head and heart. At the same time, we are balancing things in our individual consciousness, and we are changing our physical constitution so that we can be regularly or generally clairvoyant in the same way that we now see with our physical eyes. So, let's look at what we've done. We've tried to bridge a number of things together, and we saw that what we're trying to get at has caused us to understand unifying things that are very different. We tried to demonstrate a harmony between the planets and the endocrine glands. Then we tried to show that an endocrine gland in its hyperactive state is a way to understand an epitome of some type of a particular planet that rules that gland. And then we talked about the pituitary body and its work in clairvoyance. Now, when the pituitary body is hyperactive, sometimes it results in giantism. Uranus, in Greek mythology, was the primordial giant before all of the other giants. Sometimes, when the pituitary body is hyperactive, it produces a mystical personality, somebody extremely feelingful. And just now we have looked at the pituitary body and the light ether, and if we put this all together, we can begin to see some things about, in astrology, in people's lives, a little bit anyway, about the light ether and how it works. And so let's look at a few horoscopes for a little bit. I told you these talks are going to be much more philosophy than they are astrology. All right. As most of you know, in my horoscope, my character is such that I have the sun in Scorpio. And Scorpio gets the jobs that nobody else wants, like the undertakers and things like that. In the physical body, Scorpio gets the elimination, and we all know what that means. But I thrive on elimination. I'm one of those people that I love to clean house, and I love to get rid of things. I'm doing that in a very slow, progressive way now. It happens as we look back at our lives. When we start looking back, it's like a retrospection, and we let go of things, and things fall away from us. As people get older, they give up more and more of their possessions. And so I'm trying to do this consciously and voluntarily and getting rid of more and more things. But I have a tendency often to overdo things. And there have been times that I have been an eliminator to such an extent that I had to undergo the humility of digging through garbage cans to find what I threw out. I had a perfect horoscope at one time for a person who is now a social worker in San Diego that had extremely remarkable vision. She had the ability of reading a highway sign. When I could just barely make out the shape of the highway sign, she was able to read what it said on the highway sign. And I wanted to get at that because part of the manifestation of Uranus is in the optic nerves. So what I have to do is I have to, a different horoscope here, someone that's very close in that. You don't need to know who this person is. It's a living person. It's... Oops, did I lose something there? Ooh, all right. Oh, that breeze again. I got to put them somewhere else. This is the horoscope of that shows us something about Uranus and the light ether. It isn't perfect. Astrologers have known for a long time now that the optic nerves, the pair of optic nerves, cranial nerves, are ruled by Uranus. And with that affinity to light and light ether, prodigious abilities at visual seeing of things is often found with Uranus. So we're trying to become a little familiar with that. Now we could look at individuals who have higher than normal body temperatures. That's another thing that happens when Uranus is predominant in a horoscope. The people have a higher than than the normal everyday body temperature. Sometimes it happens if a person is bitten by a squirrel or something like that. You have squirrel fever, so that for the rest of your life, your temperature is at least a degree higher than the normal. And there are those special cases. As I told you, I am of Woodery of Padre Pio, and Padre Pio was a mystic. He sometimes prayed all day and all night, and he would go through changes that were like initiations, and he would have fevers so high that he would break thermometers, and they had to use the kitchen thermometers to take his temperature. And the thing of it is, his temperature got so high and he never suffered brain damage, which shows that you can experience rigors that go beyond the normal parameters of human health if you are doing the right thing. And so he was able to withstand great fevers like that. This is the horoscope of a very ordinary person like you and I. This man is someone who operates cranes at construction sites. You know those big things with the beam that come way out and they have the counterweights and things like that. He operates them. The vision of this man is so good that a nut on a piece of machinery, a nut no bigger than this, from 75 yards away, he can tell whether it is loose. And he'll complain to the foreman or to the boss of the construction crew that, hey, there's a nut over there that's loose and it could be dangerous. And he's right every time. It's quite something. If we look at the horoscope, the sun and the moon, and Pluto, but the sun and the moon are in Leo. And Leo is a very bright sign in general. Gemini is rising, which indicates the nerves, which are so important to perception. The Uranus, as we said, rules the optic nerves, and the optic nerves run from the center of the brain near the pituitary body right to what we call the blind spot. In fact, etheric vision, in some ways, is learning to look through the blind spot. Because you often see things out of the side of your eye. And then when you turn to look at them, they're gone. And this is because when you're looking through the side of your eye, you're stimulating the optic nerve directly. And if you have sufficient light ether going out of it, you're capable of seeing things. But once you focus directly again, you're reflecting off the retina. And the perception process off the retina is a very indirect process. But that's another whole subject that we daren't get into now. So in this horoscope, Uranus is in a grand trine. It's in a grand trine with Mars and Jupiter. And it's in the watery signs, and the watery signs are receptive. Also, this person has a really strong vitality, as we might expect with the sun conjoined moon in Leo. And then the second most vital sign is Scorpio. And he has Mars in Scorpio. So there's a lot of energy and vitality. Jupiter amplifies the Uranian abilities, which means an amplification of light sensitivity. This is extraordinary vision that we have. Max Heindel used to like to tell us that concentration and focus of light can burn through anything. And this is an example of somebody who is capable of concentrating in order to bring his light attention into vision. The concentration in this case is due to a very strong conjunction between Saturn and Mercury. And Saturn and Mercury is a very excellent mental control. It's a very excellent control of the nerves, sometimes too much so that a person gets nervous in trying to keep it. This person is worrisome, and the tonic that he uses for worrying is not good for his general health. We won't talk about that any further. All right, the next horoscope. I tried an experiment. I don't even know whether it works, and we may have to throw this away immediately. The next horoscope is the horoscope of Ansel Adams. Does everybody know who Ansel Adams is? All right. Before we look at the horoscope, I quickly, on my way out the door, took several photographs, rare photographs that are some of the best of Ansel Adams, and I ran them through a laser printer, and I don't know whether this is going to work out or not. This is one of his most famous, it doesn't work out at all. This is one of his most famous photographs. It's the moon, a full moon over a little pueblo in New Mexico. Unfortunately, that it doesn't work. I think the other one works a little better from the way it looks here. This is probably his most famous photo. That didn't work out so well either. You all have to go to Rochester. When I was in Rochester years ago with Elsa Glover, her parents lived there. You know, Elsa Glover was a Rosicrucian student her entire life. She was born into a family. But this is something that is almost a worshipful photograph, because when you see it in its true light, it looks like these huge boulders are bending down in worship. So experiment didn't work, but it was worth the try. All right, let's look at Ansel Adams. This Ansel Adams was probably, of all the famous photographers, the one that was most sensitive to light. He was aware of the interplay of light and darkness, I think, more than any other photographer. He perhaps didn't capture a lot of the human qualities like some of the others did, but he was most sensitive to light. Now, this horoscope is a classic for the pituitary gland, the optic nerve, and the light ether. Uranus is conjoined to the ascendant. And that's a classic. It doesn't mean that everybody that has Uranus conjoined to the ascendant is going to have remarkable vision. But with Uranus conjoined to the ascendant, it is more likely. And you find that more often than in other circumstances. This is something that you can statistically test for yourself. That's especially the case with Uranus in Gemini or Sagittarius. In the horoscopes that I've collected over the years of friends and people that I've worked with in a counseling situation, that are, if Uranus is conjoined ascendant in Gemini or Sagittarius, it's more that way. The preponderance of planets in this horoscope are in fire and air signs. And fire and air signs are light-oriented, whereas water and earth are more shadow-oriented. Uranus is on an axis, the horizontal axis, with Neptune and Pluto. And when all three, they're not all in aspect, but when all three are grouped similar to that, that indicates a heightened sensitivity. Now, let's look at his character in this. Four of the 10 planets are in fixed signs. And for him, the way this worked out was patience. He would sit for hours in a specific spot to get the light exactly that he wanted. And if it didn't work, he'd come back again. That picture of the Pueblo in New Mexico, he came back many times over several years until the conditions were just exactly right. Please look up Ansel Adams' photographs on the web. You'll see how beautiful they are. Or if you can get prints of them, it's even better. So he had that kind of patience. The Aquarius and the air signs show impersonal attitudes. This was somebody that was very impersonal about what he did. There are not many afflictions in this horoscope, not many afflictive aspects, but the ones that there are oppositions. And the oppositions and the sun in Pisces, which pulls two different directions, indicate his ability to work at contrast. This is for people who, when they see a horoscope and they see a lot of oppositions in it, they, oh my goodness, this person is doomed. Well, there are some very positive things. The ability to blend things in contrast is a healthy kind of thing. Jupiter enlarges things and puts things on a grand scale and gives things Jupiter is in opposition to the moon, and it is able to take blown up big pictures. All right. Now we look at a local boy from La Mesa. Does everyone know who Bill Walton is? Okay. Bill Walton is a now retired professional basketball player. Again, we have Uranus conjoined the ascendant. And let's look at several aspects of the Uranus conjoined the ascendant. Now, the pituitary gland or the pituitary body is said to be the captain of the endocrine system, in that it seems to initiate things that the other endocrines carry out. So if there is a central ruler of it, it is most likely the pituitary body. Uranus and the pituitary body are primary influence in the light ether, but there are other things in the vital body as it becomes manifest is in the physical that come from the pituitary body in Uranus. Normally, reproduction is the activity of the life ether. But when the pituitary body and the Uranus get out of whack, what happens is that giantism occurs. This man is approximately 7 feet tall. He doesn't really have giantism, though he has some of the characteristics that come out of giantism. And one of the things is that people who have giantism that grow to a very great height, the bones can't keep up with the growth of the soft tissue in the body. And what happens is there are subject sometimes to spontaneous breakings of bones. And this is something that happened to Bill Walton. He was in the middle of a career, and he was still having growth spurts, a professional career, and he had trouble with his feet, and all over the bones were broken. Which brings out something very interesting, a number of things. If we look in this horoscope, Uranus is very strongly opposite to Mars. And that indicates enormous pain. The people that I've experienced in life that have had Uranus opposite Mars, especially when one of the two is on the ascendants, have more pain than anybody else. I have one friend that had the tops. Got involved with a sadistic dentist, and the dentist ground off the tops of all of the teeth and didn't put caps on. And the person for years had pains. And this person is somebody also, one of the only, there are probably less than a dozen people who have survived. You know when they inject you with dye to do a CAT scan? Some people are very allergic to that and they almost always die. In her case, everything swole up and it stayed swollen. And all of the nerves were pinched by the pressure. And for like 3 years before the swelling subsided, she was in screaming pain. So we're saying here that Bill Walton was subject to those kinds of pain. Now, there's something interesting in that. The Rosicrucian philosophy teaches, as we've said several times last night and today, that the blood is ruled by the life spirit, and the life spirit works directly in the blood. But the blood is created in the marrow of the bones, and the bones are ruled by the divine spirit. And this is almost a perfect physical example of when Christ says, "I am in the Father." It's like saying that the blood is created from the Father in the bones of the body. And in all cultures, even some of the early Rosicrucian cultures, there have been mystics that tried to have what we call a feeling in your bones. When you have a feeling in your bones, you are at the deepest kind of spiritual experience that you can have in a physical sense. For example, in the Greek times, there were the mystics that were of Heracles of the Dactyls. And they chanted mystic poetry as they touched the different phalanges of their fingers, and they were trying to bring the sensation into their bones. Even some of the early Rosicrucian groups historically did that same sort of thing, trying to bring things into the bones. And this is, now, the claim is that we need to be aware of what is in our bones, of which we are normally insensitive. Unless you've had a bone bruise, you don't know how insensitive the bones are. But this is why broken bones occur. And if you look in the Gospels, I believe especially at St. Matthew's Gospel, that they make a special point about saying of Jesus' body, not a bone was broken. Which means that this was a perfect incarnation so that the spirit could come into the physical body and all of the spiritual powers could be felt in the physical body, and there was no need for any kind of bone breaking. Usually, like many illnesses, having diseases and illnesses is a mark of spiritual advancement. It means you can call back your destiny from past lives and you can reap the soul experience from that. And breaking bones is a special case of that for bringing a person to become more spiritual. But that does not necessarily mean a person may be very courageous about past destiny but may not necessarily be highly spiritual, which makes me think of somebody like Evel Knievel, who I think broke just about every bone in his body and some of them numerous times over. All right. We're all very far away from astrology, but that's the way it goes sometimes. In this case, Bill Walton, if you've ever seen him play basketball, had the phenomenal vision. On a basketball court, there are 10 players and 2 or 3 referees, depending on what kind of league it's in, and it's rather crowded. And Bill Walton had that ability to see openings that other people couldn't see. And he had the tremendous vision again, and he could make those spectacular passes. All right. Last horoscope. We don't always do a lot of astrology because people are often more interesting than astrology. I assume that everyone knows who this is. This is Thomas Merton, the famous Trappist monk. This is a character that I like very much. I must say, I like working with horoscopes of people that I like. In fact, this is another sideline. It will take us a little bit long, but I'll just tell a little story. Do you know that they have done surveys? One survey is that when they look at hospitals and they find the likelihood of recovery, some people are more likely to recover than others. And when they look at all the factors in a hospital that could possibly lead to recovery, do you know what is the only common factor that is most likely statistically? If the person has in their hospital room the view of a tree. Jim, get them to plant trees! I'm getting to another similar survey. They have interviewed and worked with all kinds of psychologists and psychiatrists of every kind of therapy you can think of. And the only single factor that is likely to indicate a cure is if the psychiatrist likes the patient, that the therapy will be more successful in that kind of case. All right. We've seen that Uranus is associated with light, ether, and the pituitary gland. We've also noted that Uranus rules the optic nerves, which Max Seindel calls, there are a pair of the cranial nerves, and Max Seindel calls all of the cranial nerves collectively the 12 gates of the New Jerusalem. So now let's try to get at something else in the light ether. We've already said that the endocrine glands are condensations of the etheric vital body. They work through the blood. The center of the heart is ruled by the life spirit, of which Christ is the central focus. The Rosicrucian philosophy teaches that the heart becomes a voluntary muscle according to how much we do things voluntarily for the Christ's sake. The more we do things for that, the more we become heart people. Thus we can see that the heart path is the path of the mystic and not the path of the occultist, which comes tomorrow. This is the path of loving feelings and of emotion. The Rosicrucian philosophy teaches, Christian mysticism teaches, the more that we sacrifice in love, the more that we have of the light ether in our spinal fluid as well as in our aura. All right, we've talked about some of these things. I don't want to be too repetitive. First thing we have to clear up is that just because somebody follows the mystic side of things does not mean that they don't think. It just means that they prefer to to follow the heart and the feelings. Thomas Merton wrote many books, quite good books. He translated directly from Latin and could speak on almost any subject, even though he had periods of 7 years of silence. He was somebody who could talk, and by discipline he could not talk. The thing that endeared me to him, I don't want to go into it because it would be a long side trip, is that he liked naughty jokes, which is something that I happen to like myself at Mercury and Scorpio. There's a whole esotericism to naughty jokes, because naughty jokes began in the mystery schools, because they're double entendres. You see something on two levels. If a person can release the tension that there is about sexuality, and a naughty joke does that, it's not so hard for you. But at any rate, this is somebody that was a dedicated mystic. The church became silenced him because he was too modern. Oranus is a sign of modernism. It's a sign of new things, a sign of novelty. This is why the mystic is adaptable to every new thing that comes along, because they have that kind of mystical openness. They trust and they have belief. They don't have the skepticism and questioning that we who are occultists have, that we, you know, that we have to grind at things. It's interesting in this that even though he was a mystic and he had taken vows, he fell in love with a nurse who was half his age. And this was the trial of the moon being opposite the sun and Uranus. And it was a mutual falling in love, and they fell in love very deeply. And then they consummated their love. And it stung him to the core of his being. It's sort of like in Parsifal. When Parsifal gets the one kiss from Kundry, he understands everything that's involved. When this happened, she understood it. It just stung him so deeply that he went and confessed. This is one of the things we work with ourselves in retrospection, but in the Catholic orders, they confess to someone else. He confessed to his superior, and for most of the rest of his life, he became a hermit. Now, this is somebody really, just for the love of the person, it has nothing to do with astrology, but this is truly a mystic. This is somebody that would get up at 4 in the morning, and before he did anything else, for the first 7 hours of the day, he prayed continuously. I don't know if any of you have ever tried to pray 7 hours, but it is really something. I've tried on various occasions when I have been stung with my own guilt. I have prayed for as much as 4 hours, but at that point you're almost disoriented because it's so otherworldly. Let's just be otherworldly and pray one time. Let's close with the Rosicrucian student's prayer. O God, increase our love for Thee so that we may serve Thee better from day to day. Let the words of our mouths and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable in Thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Yeah. Well, we have a just about 25 minutes break, and then we get into philosophy. Thank you. I don't think we have enough time to get over there and back. Let's when we finish the second talk, we'll go over. Yeah. Okay.
So no sense going through all that stress.
What?
No sense going through all that stress.
What? Right outside of our clinic downtown. So I don't have a hospital, so I can't do trees.
Oh, okay.
But right outside of the clinic, it's been there since 1923. There's a historic tree, 120 years old.
Wow.
That we can't touch or cut or anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can't get to the clinic without seeing this.
Oh, yes.
Huge tree.
Yes.
So look at that.
That's a snazzy shirt you have there. Is that silk?
Oh, no, it's old. It's probably polyester.
Oh, it's polyester. It almost looks like silk. Yeah.
Oh. Two Scorpios.
No warning there.
Is it okay?
Everybody's got their eyes open. The stairs.
And we shot the three Scorpios together.
Yeah. Well.
Where did he go?
After the lot, tomorrow's a triple header, and then I'll be done for. I'm speaking in the chapel. Yes, and a talk that might not be completely appreciated.
Yeah. All dirty jokes. I
think. No, no.
Opening some windows and letting some warm air in.
Yeah.
Thank you for an interesting talk.
Yes.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
Yeah, you've got a lot of talent.
Well,
to speak for however many days you're doing this.
Well, the talent is not. Oops, I didn't. I never turned off my recorder. Excuse me. Yeah, there it's still running.